of his word. Chanel.
Well, good morning. Welcome. If there's a couple of visitors here who might not know me, I'm Joel. I'm the pastor here. Please, would you take the Bibles again? We're going to be looking at our main reading for this morning, which is from the Old Testament, Habakkuk. If you're American, I think it's Habakkuk. But I don't think anyone's called their children Habakkuk, have they? Okay, whilst you're turning that up, a couple more things from the bookstall. This is free. This is a magazine that you can give to neighbours and friends. It's an attractively produced magazine with a couple of articles that might interest them. If they're not a believer, it's designed for you to give to people who are not believers. And then another book we didn't want to mention earlier while the children were still in. This is called The Porn Problem. Both outside and inside our churches, pornography is more freely available, more widely acceptable, and far more frequently used than ever before. This short book teaches you the Christian perspective on sex and relationships and why pornography is wrong, and helps Christians how to think about pornography with compassion and understanding for anyone who's using it. Okay, those are on the bookstore for £3 and five pence. That's not just for married couples or for single people. Everyone should find something useful in that because this is such a big thing. The internet, this is the biggest thing on the internet, is pornography. So we really ought to understand it as Christians. Habakkuk. The prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, Lord, must I cry for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. For I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law unto themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on. Guilty people, whose own strength is their God. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my Rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet. And so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, please keep that passage open. We're going to be thinking about that together. Steve has prayed for us. We trust that God is going to help us understand. This is the first of three Sunday mornings where we're going to go through the three chapters of this book together. the slide has got the question that really helps us understand the whole book. Can we have it on, please? Thank you. How can we trust God when life is tough? So perhaps a workmate has cheated in work and as a result gets a promotion. And in fact, you're the one who's done the real work. Your child is sick and they're made sicker because the doctor gives them the wrong treatment. People in Nigeria at the moment suffering the uncertainty with all of these raids and actions by armed groups. How do people cope when life is tough? How can we trust God when life is tough? The book of Habakkuk is about a time when life in the world is difficult. And God doesn't do what we expected when it was difficult. It's not just that life is tough, but life is tough and God doesn't seem to be doing the right thing. So I pray about that work situation and the workmate gets promoted again. I go to a different doctor who says, this is the medicine you should have been given, and my child gets even sicker. Life is tough and then God doesn't seem to be doing the right thing. Could we have that on the board? Sorry, that is not in place. Let's go with this. Sorry, could you go back? Go back. And I need to put these in order. How can we trust God? We're not going to get all the answers today. First of all, I want to put this book of the Bible in the right place. Any earlier, we will go to that now. This is the Bible, the whole of the Bible in three short sections to understand. It's a big book. I've invited the young adults to come on a day where we're going to spend a whole teaching day in the end of January. I hope you've seen that email. I hope you're keen to come to spend one day to go through the whole Bible. But here for us, just in three words, the Bible begins with rest in Eden, humans together with God. Next, then there is sin. Human sin means that we are thrown out from life with God, and that's represented by that downfall. Life is not what it is meant to be. Life is bad. And there's the final part of the Bible. God sends Jesus in order to restore all things. And our hope is, the Bible's promise is, that Jesus will return to put all things right. That's the whole story of history. That's the whole story of the Bible. Very simple, isn't it? If you don't remember anything else from this morning, but you remember that, that's enough. It gets a bit more complicated. If we put the history of Israel into the story, next one. Sorry, can you go on? I haven't put these slides in as I expected. The history of Israel shows God's people in the Old Testament as a mini version of this. They're in the Promised Land, then they are thrown out of the Promised Land, and then they're looking forward to that ultimate hope too. Oh, sorry, I can't, thank you, I can't see it because of the colour on this screen. Thank you, you've got the red. Thank you. So it looks like a mini version of the same thing. They're in the land of Israel. Then because of their sin, they are thrown out. And then God promises to restore them in the end. They are a visual aid, if you like, of the whole picture of the Bible. So how do the prophets fit into this? Habakkuk is one of the prophets. Many of us know the prophets as the people who make promises about the coming Messiah. So they promise Jesus will come, he'll be born in Bethlehem, he'll be the son of David, he will bring justice. And they do say that. But the prophets say a lot more than that. They speak, to begin with, to the people in their own time. They explain what's going on in their current situation. And someone has said that they are forth-tellers as much as foretellers. They speak forth about what's happening now as much as foretelling what will happen in the future. And we'd see that in Habakkuk. God's judgment is hardly mentioned in some churches, and that must be because their ministers never preach from the prophets, because the prophets are full of talking about the judgment of God, talking about human sin and why God is going to judge. So that's the background to this, the picture of the whole Bible, and then the place of prophets. Can we have the next slide? I can see these words. How can we trust God when life is tough and God doesn't seem to be doing right? That's Habakkuk's experience. Look at verse 2. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Habakkuk's problem is that God doesn't seem to be dealing with the wicked in Judea, where he is. He questions God, you, and then he talks about the people, them. This is the situation in God's city, Jerusalem. Verse 3, why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Verse 4, therefore the law is paralyzed. This is God's life instruction for his people, his way for his people. It's paralyzed. It can't move. It can't act. It can't help. And the background to that is in this period in the history of Israel, the rulers of God's people were oppressing the people. That's there in verse 4. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous. We've also got a beginning of verse 3. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? And the role of rulers is to not have their poor people build them big palaces. That's not the point of being a ruler, according to the Bible. We learned from Solomon a few weeks ago, the point of rulers is to bring justice. They're to administer justice so that the society can work. But that wasn't happening then. So the sins of the rulers are going unpunished. Habakkuk's prayers are unanswered. God seems to be asleep. And it's not just happening in the bad world out there. It's happening amongst the believers, the people of God. It's happening amongst people. Today you would say it's like when this happens amongst those who call themselves Christians. God, how can you let this go on? The corruption that can happen in churches. Abuse that's covered up in churches. God, why have you let that go on? So, verse 2. How long, Lord, must I call out for help, but you do not listen? His prayers are not being answered. I cry out violence, but you don't save. God's not acting. And so sufferers are not rescued. Aniola, next slide, please. First lesson here. It's okay to complain. When life is tough and God doesn't seem to be doing what we'd expect, Habakkuk is one of the examples in the Bible where it shows us it's okay to complain. Now, complaining is common to us, and we must know the difference between complaining and grumbling. We talked about this in Wednesday church this week, didn't we? Grumbling is when I complain about my life, perhaps I complain about God. Moan about the weather, we moan about the politicians, we moan about food prices, we moan about the NHS, we moan about people who moan. We just go on and on. What Habakkuk is doing here is he's complaining to God. It's an act of trust. He's saying, God, what are you doing? I'm bringing this to you, God. I'm seeking your answer because I don't understand what's going on. And Habakkuk and a number of the psalm writers make that sort of complaint to God. Complaining's okay. Did you know that? Did you know that as a believer? It's okay when life is difficult to make prayers of complaint to God. It's an act of faith. Because you're saying, you are in charge, and I know you're good, but I don't understand. Well, the Lord answers Habakkuk's complaint here. He responds that he is going to judge using a ruthless people. Verse 5, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians. So here he's saying, I'm going to deal with this by raising up an invading army from another empire, another country. Immediately, we're seeing here that God is just. God will deal with right and wrong. We were right to trust him, although it's confusing now. We were right to trust him. We try to bring about justice in our world today, but often it's out of our hands. You know that situation in work where someone else gets the promotion? You can't get justice. You can't run the company. You're a victim. But God promises he will put all things right. He will deal with all the wrongs in the world. The organized violence and the intimidation in Nigeria. In every country, the corrupt judges, the politicians, failing to organize justice for others and selfishly taking for themselves. Bullies, gangs, abusers, people traffickers. God will deal with it. How can we trust when life is tough? Know that God does judge. Trust his promises. He does see and he will act. Now, that's not a surprise to Habakkuk and the people of his time. They knew God is a God who cares about justice. They knew he would act. But how God is going to do it is a surprise. Verse 5. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you wouldn't believe, even if you were told. Those are the words that Chanel read earlier from one of Paul's sermons to people who were hearing about Jesus for the first time. So she read those words. What he's talking about, though, in his day, Habakkuk, verse 6, I'm raising up the Babylonians. Now, the first reason that this is extraordinary, it's like God saying, I can see there's a problem with the church in Dagenham, so I'm going to make a new empire called China, and that will sort out this problem with the church in Dagenham. It's completely out of scale, isn't it? Do you really need to create a new empire to sort out the problem with our little church? Well, that's the way God's going about it. And that's part of what the prophets are teaching. When the prophets are teaching in the Old Testament, they're saying, look at history, read your newspapers, but do understand from the newspapers, well, you won't understand from newspapers, do understand that these kingdoms that are coming and going, that's all God's work. Verse 6, I, God, am raising up the Babylonians. God is behind all of this. All of that's happening in history, he's behind that. But there's a different issue that's going to be a difficulty for Habakkuk. Look at what this group are like. Verse 6, I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people. That's their character. What about what they do? They sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. How do other people see them? They are a feared and dreaded people. What kind of justice do they bring about? Well, they're a law to themselves. They just do what they like. And now he starts to use picture language, comparing them to animals. Their horses are swifter than leopards. Leopards are very swift. So these are supercharged horses, aren't they? You will not get away. Fiercer than wolves at dusk, hungry for meat, violent, brutal, aggressive. Their cavalry, so that's their soldiers on horseback, gallops headlong. They're going straight ahead. Their horsemen come from afar, so you can't be out of their reach. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. Imagine the little animal nibbling away the food in the fields, happily thinking it's okay. Whoosh! Something comes out of nowhere and it's gone. It's like a drone attack. Verse 9, they all come intent on violence. That is their purpose, to damage. Verse 10, they mock at kings and scoff at rulers. And they're not afraid of who's in charge. Who's in charge here? We're in charge. We've come. They laugh at all fortified cities by building earthen ramps. They capture them. So in this time in history, people made themselves safe by building towns with walls around them or cities with walls. And if there was a danger from an invader, you'd all run into the city, shut the gates, you're safe. Not with the Babylonians. They've got such a massive army, they can dig so much earth, they'll just make a hill up against the edge of your wall and they'll walk up the hill over the wall into your city. You cannot be safe. So back in verse 2, Habakkuk was saying, look, there's violence in my city. Things are going wrong amongst the people of God. And God says, oh, yeah, I see violence. Here's what I'll do. I'm going to raise up this terrifying empire who's going to come and crush. It's like God saying, oh, yeah, I've heard there's problems in Sweden with some of their justice, so I'll send the North Koreans to fix it. It's like God saying, I know there's some problems in some churches in Nigeria, so I'll send Boko Haram to bring about fairness. How can that be? It's extraordinary that God is doing this. And so Habakkuk says that. How can this be? His second complaint is, God, that's even worse. And like he had in his first, he starts off by saying, you God, you God, you God, and then he starts talking about them. Well, he. So he's got questions. Verse 12, Lord, are you not from everlasting? Yes, God is from everlasting, isn't he? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. It's not saying that he looks the other way and doesn't realize what's going on. This is saying God so loathes evil, he'll never be partners with people who've got wrong in them. So how can he be using them? You see, Habakkuk doesn't understand. And what we've got here is an example where God's people are allowed to ask questions. We do not understand everything. And it's okay to admit we're uncertain. Here we go. Questions are okay. It's on the board above. If someone tells you, look, just become a Christian and you will understand everything, get away from them. They don't know what the Christian message is. It doesn't make us understand everything. It doesn't leave us without questions. But what we will find is that some of God's answers are surprising to us. God, how can you do this? Then he describes again these enemies that are coming using picture language. Verse 14, you have made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have got no ruler, no one to lead them, no one to care for them. So what happens to those people? Verse 15, the wicked foe pulls them up with hooks. He catches them in their net. Think how helpless fish are, flapping around and struggling when they've been gathered into a net. They can't go. The fisherman gathers them into his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. This is what the Babylonians are like. Completely fearless of their enemies. Verse 16, therefore he sacrifices to his net, for by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. So in this picture, you know, the Babylonians, they see their own strength is like their God. They honor their own strength. They don't have any reference to God of heaven. Their strength is all they need. Their strength is what looks after them and how they succeed. So how can we trust God when life is tough and God doesn't seem to be doing the right thing? Perhaps you're here and you're not yet a believer. And this is a slightly odd chapter of the Bible to you. You thought that if there was a prophet, he would have a message from heaven and he would tell you the message from heaven. But what we've actually got here is a prophet arguing with heaven. But that's in the scriptures. It's one of the different ways in which God communicates to his people. In his message, we see these three lessons. What do we do? How do we trust when God, when life is tough and God doesn't seem to be doing right? Complaint is okay. Grumbling is wrong. Grumbling about God. But complaint to God is okay. In God's reply, we see the reminder that God is just. He's not blind to suffering. But his answers to our questions are not always what we might expect. And we're going to see more of that in the rest of the book. But just as far as we've got to the point at which the prophet is asking some very difficult questions. I don't know if you've had the experience, but people sometimes mock me or mock the church that I lead and say, oh yeah, it's just for people who can't deal with difficult questions. you go and hide away in church and avoid the difficult questions about life. Trust in that promise that God's going to sort everything out. Well, I wish I had your faith, but I'm afraid I'm just too honest about life. Have you ever heard that sort of criticism? That's what people will say about us. The Bible has got the hard questions in it. People are asking the hard questions. You know, the difficult questions like, why does God let my child be ill? Why does God allow these things that are happening in Nigeria and other countries that we hear about in the news? As I said last week, I think one of the great things about being a Christian that we help one another with is we can ask the big questions about life together. We're not afraid of them. Because I think actually those who stay out and mock, they're not asking these questions. They're just going to the pub to get drunk, or they're watching the football to avoid it. As Christians, we shouldn't be afraid of the questions of why do I even have life? Why do I live in this world? How can I deal with the guilt of what I've done to my friend or my family? What is the point of my life? Where am I going? We can ask those questions. God's answers aren't always easy, but we don't need to be afraid as God's people to ask those difficult questions. Let me lead us in a prayer. Loving Father, please teach us not to grumble, but to boldly complain to you in trust. Give us trust in your promise that you judge. And thank you that with you we can ask and face the big questions of life. Amen.